This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Farmer's Kitchen on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You're listening to Farmer's Kitchen podcast. I'm Poonam Verma. On the show today, we talk to the executive chef behind PXB, which is a plant-based restaurant in Expo. I find out about a Punjabi barbecue. And also, we have two Georgian ladies who came together and decided to open a very authentic Georgian restaurant. And we talked to one lady who loves chai so much she's written a book about it.
You're listening to Farmer's Kitchen on Dubai Eye 103.8.
With Spinneys. Eat well, live well.
So with me now is Chef Zach Carey. He's the executive chef of PXB at Expo, and it's all based around plant-based diets and foods. And I think it's vegan. Is that right, Zach?
Exactly that, yeah. Vegan restaurant.
Vegan restaurant. So it's not plant-based, it's vegan?
Similar thing. We like to say plant-based, basically, because we like
to... What is
to...
the difference, then?
It's a tough one. Some people, it's kind of the same thing. I think we like to say plant-based more just because these days it's nicer to say that you're pushing plant-based ingredients rather than the vegan. A lot of people get scared of the vegan connotation. So plant-based for me and the guys in the restaurant sounds a lot nicer, we think.
But is it practically the same?
It's practically the same thing, yeah.
Oh, okay.
We're just trying to get rid of that thing of like people being scared of veganism and like seeing it as this big name tag and this big thing. So plant-based is kind of this newer way of explaining it, basically.
Okay. So let's start off with PXB. Does that stand for anything?
So it's like a little play on... So this is the first restaurant here in Dubai. So it's kind of a little play on the DXB airport. So PXB, plant-based Dubai.
Oh,
that's kind of the idea behind it.
That is actually quite clever.
Yeah, it's quite cool.
I do like that. And when you say it's the first one, as in the first one on the planet Earth?
Yeah, or... brand new concept last year. We opened in June. So it's a brand new concept.
So you opened in June last year at Expo. Was there a particular place where they chose Expo as a location?
Not really. It's more so because there's the sustainability pavilion within Expo City. So that just fitted the brand so well. So they asked us to open the restaurant there and we came up with the brand.
Okay, so before we go into the restaurant itself and the menu and the whole philosophy behind it, let me find out a little bit about you. Now, you're from the UK in Norwich.
Right.
Now, I grew up in Birmingham. Norwich wasn't known for a massive foodie place, right?
No.
So what was around you growing up that excited you to become a chef?
Well, Norwich isn't known very well at all anyway. No one knows where Norwich is here when I'm here. So
I don't think I've ever been, you know.
No, a lot of people haven't. Not much going on, to be honest. Lovely, but it's small.
Yeah.
Food-wise, very, very typical kind of country town. So it's a lot of like British
so
pub food.
Roasts,
very much like that, yeah.
Sticky toffee pudding.
Literally that. Pies, things like that. All the British classics that are really popular here, actually, aren't they? So,
they are too.
But that was it, really, in Norwich. And that's where I actually worked, in like a British pub. That's where I kind of learned and that's where I started. Where it all really started.
What made you want to become a chef? Was anyone else in your family into food?
Not at all, really. I was at college doing something else. I was doing a business diploma. And just in my spare time, I worked at the local pub, which was like 2 minutes from me. You know, just learning. I wasn't interested in it at all when I got there. Just needed a job.
Yeah.
And actually, after a year or so, I actually really enjoyed it. And then when I was coming up to the end of my college course, the owner of the pub was like, you know, we'd really like to keep you on full time. Would you consider, you know, staying on maybe until you find something you want to do a bit later in life? But for now, you know, we'd love you to stay on. And I did. And then ended up staying there for like 4 or 5 more years.
Wow. So you learned a lot on the job.
I learned loads there. Loads and loads and loads. Yeah, I learned everything really from
that.
Did
you come up with any new menus for them as well?
Not really there because I was very young. I tried to, but I was very young and there was a head chef and stuff. So the reason I left there was because I needed to kind of progress myself and actually...
So you didn't go to culinary school?
Didn't, no, I didn't.
So then what happened from there next?
So from there, I actually... So I became vegan while I was still kind of working at that pub.
Why?
I was... looking for like a lifestyle change anyway. I was kind of feeling in myself I'd slipped a little bit in terms of I'd put on some weight. I wasn't training. I'd stopped, you know, playing football and all this kind of stuff. And I was really just not looking after myself enough. And I was, me and a group of friends, we went, oh, we'll go vegan just to try it and tried it and loved it.
And you still vegan?
Saw some results.
So tell me, was it difficult? Because coming from, you know, that kind of world of pub food and steaks, it's quite difficult to suddenly change.
It was a tough change. When I first went vegan, I obviously was still working in that pub environment, so I still had to like taste food.
Yeah.
I didn't like, and after a while I was just kind of like, you know, I'm working in this place, I don't really want to So that I actually, the owner of the restaurant that I moved to, I messaged him, it was a vegan restaurant, and he said, you know, I'd love to work for you. And that's all kind of how it went from there.
So when you moved to the other restaurant, which is quite a well-known one in England, can I just ask you, what changes did you notice when you became vegan?
For me, straight away, I think straight away I felt better just in myself. I wasn't feeling as lethargic. I wasn't feeling as heavy. I was feeling more eager to like train, look after myself. So for me, the changes were night and day. Within probably 3-4 months, I was feeling so much better. And don't get me wrong, I'd put lifestyle changes in alongside it, which obviously helped. But for me, I would always recommend it. Now, I always recommend people who talk about it, you don't need to do that 100% change. You can't just some small changes in your day-to-day life. You're grabbing your coffee from Starbucks, try plant-based milk. Doesn't mean you have to have plant-based every day. Just, you know, every now and again, just try some changes in your life.
Yeah, because we got a text from Jeannie. She says, I heard that plant-based or vegan diet doesn't suit everyone. And how do you know if it doesn't suit you?
That's exactly right. It doesn't suit everyone. You have to be reactive to your body. You have to listen to your body. Mm. Of course, if you think you've made this big change, it is a big change, and it's just not working for you, I would not be the kind of person to say, just stick it out, stick it out, stick it out. You have to listen to your body, of course.
So you'll be proud of me because for the first time ever yesterday, I made fresh homemade cashew milk.
Wow, very nice.
It was the easiest thing I've ever done. Yeah. And it was the softest milk. And I'm like, I'm going to do this every week now.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Yeah, it's so really easy.
Nice. Yeah, it is super, super easy. It
saves a lot of money as well.
Saves some money, super easy to do.
And you know exactly what's in it, don't
exactly
you?
Exactly that, yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely true. So let's talk a little bit briefly about the PXB itself. What is the philosophy of the whole concept? And we know it's vegan and everything, but is it homegrown food? Do you have to import food from there?
So the whole idea behind it is to use whole food ingredients, organic ingredients where available. We grow a lot of produce actually at Expo City. There's a big farm that we built. So most of our fresh vegetables and fruits come from there daily. So that's the message behind the restaurant, really. Whole foods, organic foods where possible, and of course some nice. They've got all, like, we've had the fake burgers, we have the fake chicken, but you can't eat those things every day. You have to be careful. So the message is to eat whole foods, organic foods where possible.
When you talk about the farm, is that a farm that's taken care of by Expo for restaurants to use, or it's specifically for you guys?
No. So it's an Expo project. It's for anyone to use. They harvest every day. There's too much produce for just one restaurant. There's so much produce every day.
Yeah.
So it gets distributed. You can go to the farm, collect your produce, whatever you like.
That's amazing.
So what
grows there?
Oh, they grow everything. Lettuces, aubergines, peppers, cucumbers.
Can we do our shopping there?
You can definitely come and do. I'm sure there's too much there, so please come.
Are
and
you
take
serious?
Some.
Can yeah, the yeah, public yeah. come?
No, public can't come.
So
public cannot
I
come.
I can go
no.
through you and
don't
get some
all turn
stuff.
Turn up and take some stuff. Yeah. No, you can't.
So let's talk about the food, because I was looking at the menu. First, tell us some of the dishes that we'll find.
So you've got some classics on there. You know, we've trying to do recognizable dishes that you might get in a normal restaurant and make them plant based and vegan. So we've got a katsu curry. We've got a Buddha bowl, we have pancakes, you know, burritos, all kinds of stuff like that, Mexican bowls, Asian noodles, plenty of salads. We do vegan burgers, vegan chicken burgers.
You see, I like eating healthy and I love cooking, and I know I could go vegan if I had a chef to do it for me every day.
That's what you need at home.
Exactly. So whenever you're free, let me know. But it's true. It's like if you had someone who knew how to cook that, and because I like flavorable food, even as Indian food, it's vegetarian, it's still got spices. And a lot of people will connect, especially back in the day when they first started, they'd be like, plant-based food's so bland. And it's, you know, what are some of the mistakes that people are making when they think about plant-based food and being vegan as tasteless?
Well, that's the problem. That's what we're trying to really try and get away from, is get away from that thing where everyone thinks that vegan food is just tasteless and has no flavor. It's not true. You need to earn the flavor a little bit more. Don't get me wrong, you do. Meat, you naturally get the fats and stuff, so you get that flavor naturally. So with plant-based food, you have to earn it a little bit more, but you can certainly make flavor.
All right. So on the menu, am I correct? Did it say things like fish and chips, chicken, steak?
Yeah.
So you are replacing the texture and the flavor of these food produce.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do.
With vegan. So give me an example. What are you using it as the fish?
So fish, we use banana blossom, which is it's sort of like the stem off the banana tree. It comes from Thailand. We get it in. And you basically press it with all them kind of flavors that in your head, when you think fish, you might think nori, you might think dill, capers, lemon. We sort of marinate it, press it, squeeze it into like a fish shape, and then we'll batter it and fry it. It's a classic.
And is the texture the same?
The texture's good because it's kind of like, it's got that kind of flaky stringiness to it. When you kind of pull it away with a fork, it'll tear and it'll shred.
Does it have, I can't say fishy, but a sweet taste if it's from banana?
It's almost got like a sweet fishy taste, yeah.
It probably almost tastes Caribbean style, maybe.
Almost, yeah,
like
yeah.
Like plantain.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
Okay, what about the chicken? What do you use for that?
So a lot of the chickens are like soy-based. So it's a great source of protein. A lot of them are soy-based, so it's like pressed soybeans formed into a patty, nice crispy coating on the outside, and you deep fry it, you get a lovely crispy chicken burger.
And the steak?
The steak's a great one. So we use a mushroom called lion's mane mushroom, and you can slice it into like a steak slice, get it really, really into a hot frying pan with maybe some paprika, some salt, some pepper, plenty of oil. And you can really sear it, and it's got once you cut into it, it's got a real like meaty texture.
You must have to be quite creative to come up and think about replacing meat products, fish products, and even egg for these kind of alternatives. So, have you got anything else that you've been experimenting with?
To be honest, I like to do a lot of my research into chefs who are better than me and see what they're doing, you know, and then implement it into the restaurant. There's a lot of things I want to try that I haven't tried, you know, like a vegan omelette. I'm currently trying to get ready for the next menu.
What would you put in a vegan omelette?
So I'm trying to use gram flour.
Oh, so we use gram flour all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen it. You can use gram flour, but it's kind of like pancake texture, isn't it?
Kind of like that, yeah. And I'm trying to just get it thin enough so it's not like cakey, but I want it thin enough so it can be omelets, so you can flip it. Yeah. So that's going to be another one we're going to try and work with and try and make something.
I think also, I mean, I don't know, you must have watched other chefs, whether it's Indian, African, all these kind of people where they do have a lot of vegetarian alternatives and use different produce. Mm-hmm. You must learn a lot from them as well.
Oh, God, yeah. Like I said, I'm only 27, so there's millions of chefs who are way better than me and way more experienced than me. I'm always looking for inspiration off others, for sure.
Yeah. And what about the actual... There's a podcast that takes place at PXB, which is quite interesting. What is that all about?
So that's Louis, the founder of PXB. So he'll podcast anyone, really. It's not all to do with food. He can podcast with... it could be a doctor. It could be a local farmer who's got a mushroom farm below farm. He'll interview the owner of that. Jane Goodall recently, he just interviewed.
Wow.
Yeah, so the lifestyle is the brand, really. It's a plant-based lifestyle, so it's not just focused on food.
So Louis is the one who founded PXB.
Yeah, he's the curator, yeah.
And what's his background when it comes to this kind of diet?
So, again, I don't think he'd mind me saying it. I think he was younger, living a bit of a reckless lifestyle. He just needed a change in his life, much similar to me, really. Needed that change, needed something to keep him switched on, keep him alert. Get him out of his bad habits, all this kind of stuff. So he switched to the plant-based lifestyle about 11 years ago now.
Okay. So do you have any events coming up? Because I read on your website there's a wellness event that you do.
Wellness Day is on the 28th, yeah. So you can come along to that.
The 28th of April?
Of this month, yeah.
Oh, so what's going to happen?
So there's going to be ice baths, meditation, yoga.
Are you serious?
Obviously, yeah, food available obviously in the restaurant. It's going to be a real good day, that one.
Oh my God, I didn't know that. And that's going to be all on the website?
All on the website, yeah. Follow or in the Instagram bio, follow the link.
What is your Instagram page so people can follow you?
So the Instagram is at pxb.life.
And where are you located at Expo?
We are in the Sustainability Pavilion.
Okay, amazing. Well, thank you so much. But
Thank you.
Didn't see any nibbles, any vegan nibbles.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Left in the car myself.
I'll think twice about inviting you again next time, okay? Chloe, sort it out. Every person has to bring them.
Bring the snacks, yeah.
No, I'm joking. Lovely to meet you, Zach.
Thanks,
all right? And maybe we'll all pop down on the 28th.
Please do, yeah.
Thank you.
This is Farmer's Kitchen on Dubai Eye 103.8.
With Spinneys. Eat well, live well.
Right, with me now is a fellow Punjaban in the studio. Gups Jutler, born in the UK with a Punjabi and Kenyan background, and the man behind a company called Gourmet Barbecue and Curry. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
So I just went to you Punjabi Sikh, and you went, yeah, and I was like, straight away. You've been here 20 years.
Yeah, it's been a long time, yeah, 20 years, and lots of changes over the last 20 years.
So what have you been doing for 20 years here?
So I pathways with my corporate world. So I left, the corporate environment about 3 years ago. I started up my own business, building digital banks for the youth, which is my main venture. Yeah. And now I'm basically tapping into, cooking for guests and starting to build my own brand around barbecue and curry.
Okay, so what is this, the blend between Punjabi and the Kenyan background? Are your parents from Kenya originally?
Yeah, so my father is from Punjab, North India. Mm-hmm. And he met my mother in 1961 on their wedding day.
Yes, people, this does happen in our culture.
Yeah. in Kenya. So they spent a couple of years in Kenya, then they moved to London in 63, I believe.
Yeah.
And the whole family went with them. So my whole background, I was born, raised in the UK. The whole family is in the UK. So I've got, in total, I think, at last count, 53 first cousins.
I think I've got about that many too, because my dad has 12 brothers and sisters. And then, but I love it. Yeah. I mean, I know everyone lives in all different kinds of places, but it's great having a big family. So let's talk about gourmet barbecue and curry. How did that come about now that you've left the corporate world?
So food has always been a passion for me. And like you mentioned, Punjabi households, you know, huge family events, huge social gatherings. And with that comes food. Mm. And two of the key chefs at the time were my aunt and my mother, my late aunt, should I say. And she was from North India. So she was from Punjab. My mum was from Kenya. So I got the best of both worlds, learning from the both of them. And the irony was, my late aunt, she was a full vegetarian, yet she cooked every single meat masala.
That's like my mum.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, same.
That's brilliant.
It is brilliant. Yeah. And I think that's really nice that even though they're vegetarian, they're still willing to cook, you know, meat for us.
And not taste their own, you know.
Yeah, well, I'd taste it for her.
Exactly.
That's what they're for. Exactly. So are you telling me that you would be in the kitchen and learn how to cook from them?
Yeah, so really, I think it sort of stemmed from when I went to university. They wanted me to gear up and, you know, cook home-cooked food from at university. So they got me in the kitchen and, you know, taught me all the basics. And Indian cooking is very simple.
Yeah, ginger, garlic for the basic, the tomatoes.
I mean, it's not rocket science. It's so simple. It's just getting the right balance.
Yes.
Yeah. When to add this, when to add that. And ever since then, so at university, they feared me eating, you know, junk food and baked beans on toast, you know, the usual student food. So when I got to university, I carried on cooking for friends. And when I got back from university, I continued this passion cooking at friends' houses, doing barbecues, get itchy feet and always get behind the stove kind of thing.
I think that's amazing, though, especially for a guy back in those days. You know what I mean? It was always like trying to tell the girls to cook. My dad was an amazing cook because he grew up in a family where everybody cooked. But not a lot of people, men and women, the younger generation, don't know how to cook today. And I don't think that's a good thing, because I think ordering out too much, you don't know always what's in your food, the salt, the butter and everything. I like home-cooked food.
Yeah. And that's where the concept's really drawn from. So, like I said, I moved to Dubai 20 years ago. And then, believe it or not, I only got to the desert 10 years ago. So I waited 10 years before I actually experienced the desert and the outdoors.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't forgive myself for that. However, what inspired me to join that was a group of camping dads that go on trips every month. And you get invited by a sponsor to come in. So you don't know anyone when you get there.
Yeah.
And it's a big following. There's like 50 to 70 of us active, you know, campers, should I say. And Amazing. We take our kids out every month. So the kids get out, the parents, the fathers get out, and
moms have a rest.
Yeah, moms are, you know, having a
spa day.
Spa day, should I say? And then, you know, don't get me wrong, these guys used to make great gourmet steaks, all the different flanks. And my first trip, I turned up with a big pot, whole bunch of meat, my ingredients, and started cooking. And one of my dear friends today said to me, "Are you making a curry in the desert?" I said, "Yeah, all I need is a fire." You know, and it's just simple as that. And then ever since then, I've become, you know, one of the leading chefs in that gang of dads. And we do it on a periodic basis.
But can people order from Gourmet Barbecue and Curry? Can they order?
Yeah, so the way it works is I'm a small brand right now, and I just started about 6 months ago. So my first and foremost, I like to do what we call, you know, hosting at people's houses. So very casual environment where I sit down with the customer, see what they want, how many guests are coming, what type of food they need, over what period. We decide on a menu and I basically bring my kitchen to their garden and cook a number of courses over a, say, 4 or 5 hour period. And then while I'm cooking like starters and nibbles and not the typical, you make everything and put it on the table. And then in the background, I'm making a curry, which is for the main meal. So it's like a grazing menu, if you like. So that's one sort of way I serve customers.
Yeah.
The other way is I have this format, like you said, home-cooked food, very community-based. So I've got a community of about 50 people right now. And these are friends that have tasted my food in the past. And they said to me, Guts, why don't you start, you know, cooking for us outside of camping and went on these social events. So I thought, okay, let's try it out. So I send out a menu on a Monday to my community and I get up to 10 people on average a week. And then I give them a window until, say, Wednesday, Thursday to commit. And then I start cooking freshly cooked food on a Friday, sometimes Thursday, you know, get some things prepared because depending on the menu.
Yeah.
And it could vary. You know, it's not just Indian food. So I do Thai, Polynesian, Malaysian, Indonesian, Japanese.
So why don't you start like a supper club?
It is a bit of a supper club, but at home. So it's basically having comfort food on a Friday delivered, and you can have it any time over the weekend.
Yeah.
And it's fit for a family. So
when your wife, does your wife work?
Yeah, she's a freelancer.
Okay, so when she comes back from work, are you just in the kitchen cooking masala and everything? Are you sitting with the apron on?
Yeah, exactly. I smell like a curry house.
It's just a whole different image.
Yeah.
But are you doing this full time now?
No. This is just, you know, once a week or on the weekends, is, you know, because I got my full-time job.
But you must have a passion for this, right?
Yeah, that's what keeps me going. It keeps me going because, like, when I want a break from my real work, this will keeps me going. And, you know, my kids are my best experiment because, they, you know, when I'm away traveling, I spend a lot of time in Saudi Arabia and their mum's in the kitchen. You know, they don't get the gourmet meals that I cook them.
Did you just put your wife's cooking down on live on air?
She knows it.
All right, we're gonna find out what's on the menu at the Gourmet Barbecue and Curry with Gupjutsla after this.
You're listening to Farmer's Kitchen on Dubai I 103.8.
With Spinneys. Eat well, live well.
The one thing I respect about a man is a man that can cook, and Gupjutsla definitely can cook. Now tell us, what is on the menu on Barbecue and Curry? What kind of things can we order when it comes to the Punjabi mixed with the Kenyan background?
Sure, so like I said, so there's two kind of formats. One is I can host at people's houses, and then I give the host basically a menu or suggestions on what they can order. It could be shish kebabs, it could be lamb chops, it could be mint lamb chops, it could be chicken tikka. And when you say the Kenyan style is basically a slightly different way of cooking. It's more outdoor cooking on what we call a tava, which
is word tava.
Yeah.
How do you explain a tava to a Westerner?
A large flat frying pan.
Yeah, and which we make rotis on really mainly, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. But it's like solid, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So you get
it's great for like a weapon when your mom wants to hit you. Your Punjabi mom.
Yeah, they got all shapes and sizes to hit you with, right? So that's typically you cook outdoors around a campfire or on a barbecue, and you're basically cooking from scratch, ingredients from scratch. So it's not, you know, the food is obviously just pre-marinated, but you're cooking like a masala and a curry and adding all different ingredients at the same time. And it's quite social because people can see what you're throwing in. And it's very conversational, should I say, conversational cooking.
Yeah.
So that's typically the Kenyan Goroga barbecue that I do. But the menus can vary, and it's all available on my website. And those are just some suggestions. But, you know, I could do the Punjabi tikka masala, garai gosht, butter chicken again.
Butter chicken, where did this originate from? Because growing up, we never said butter chicken in our household.
Yeah. So my understanding is it was from, you know, East London, Brick Lane. Yeah.
Southall End.
Yeah, no, the other side. East London.
So did they just throw that name in to make it more attractive to Westerners?
Exactly, yeah.
But what is it in our, what would we call it? Just masala chicken?
Yeah.
Because we don't put cream in our food at home.
Not necessarily, but you can add it, or Greek yogurt is a good alternative.
Yogurt, yeah. I always put yogurt.
Yeah, and that adds a bit more texture, a bit more, I would say, heartiness, shall I say, to the meal.
Yeah.
My understanding, it came from Brick Lane, catered for the Westerners. Now it's a global
phenomenon. It's
phenomenal.
Completely crazy. And are you one of those Punjabi cooks like me where we don't measure anything? We just put a bit of salt in, taste it. Put like there's no real strict measurement.
I can never make the same thing twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and often my friends say that, can you please remember what you did on that one? I said, that's not going to happen.
No.
And typically, you know, coming back to the Punjabi household, you never cook for 10, you always cook for 20.
Yes.
Yeah, because you never know who's going to turn up.
Yeah. And even today, when I cook, I'll make a big batch and I'll have it in the freezer. That's what we do.
Exactly. I tend to do the same thing. But yeah, it's all about quantity and just knowing what balance needs to go in as an ingredient. And sometimes you think of, oh, shall I try that today and see how it comes out? So it's very experimental.
So does your wife enjoy cooking?
Yeah, she loves cooking.
Okay, so you do cook together?
Yeah, occasionally we cook together.
And you're always telling her what she's doing wrong?
No, that is...
that's where the trouble comes out.
Yeah, exactly. That's where the belnar comes out. What do you call belnar?
It's the rolling pin.
Rolling pin, yeah.
It's just another weapon for get hit in the kitchen when you're doing something wrong, especially for the boys. So listen, let's talk about, there's just two basic Punjabi desserts which you have on the menu, which I know you don't make from scratch, but you do serve them. What are they?
So rasmalai is one.
Rasmalai what flavor? With kulfi? No.
Yeah, so you can do it with kulfi. And a real great topping is crushed Kit Kat. Frozen crushed Kit Kat.
I like the Western Indian fusion.
Yeah, exactly. It's so simple.
And then you've got my favorite gulab jamun.
Yeah, so I sort of cheat on those because I'll be honest, I'm not a dessert guy. Mm. I'm more of, you know, cooking the real hearty starters and the main meals.
Okay.
And to be honest, we never get to dessert.
To the dessert. So you're so full. So when's your next little project? Who are you cooking for next?
So I'm traveling for the next couple of weeks, but I've got an event at a friend's place, dear friend of ours, for about 20 people, and we've already agreed on the format and all the different ingredients, what time we get there. But with friends, you know.
Do you have any little helpers chopping and everything for you? Or is it just you doing everything?
Just me.
That's exhausting. Yeah, you need someone to help.
It can be tiring.
It's the preparation that takes time.
Yeah, exactly. It's preparation, sourcing the food, making sure you've got everything, your kitchen in your car. So it's basically, you know, bringing the kitchen, cooking, you know, unloading, loading your car, bringing it home, cleaning up. I do have a nanny at home that does help me with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But when I'm on site, I'm typically by myself.
So how can people find you online if they want to, like, you know, try your food and book you?
So on my website, it's www.bbq, so barbecue, and curry.com, bbq and curry.com. Mm. Or on my social media, same thing, bbq and curry.com on Instagram. Mm. And you can either DM me or on my website, on my footer, there's my WhatsApp phone number, email, everything's available on my website.
And Gilts, why don't you tell everybody what you've bought for us?
Oh.
He's brought us some good food. What have you bought for us?
I bought chili chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah, and chili paneer mushroom.
And there's massive portions, so anyone passing by, I will happily share one spoon with you each. Gups, thank you so much, and I wish you all the best.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
This is Farmer's Kitchen on Dubai Eye 103.8.
With Spinneys. Eat well, live well.
So everybody keeps telling me, and this is the truth, because I want to go away in 2 weeks, to go to Georgia. And I've never been. And I was looking online and they're like, the food's so good, the people are so nice, the place is so nice. And I have a feeling my next guest will entice me to book this flight by the end of today. With me now is Mariam and Nino, and they're the ladies behind the Georgian restaurant Kartuli. Is that right?
Kartuli.
Kartuli. Do I have to say an Italian accent?
Kartuli, I would say. Kartuli. Kamarjoba punam, which means hello in Georgia.
Say that again.
Gamarjoba.
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 You know, this word originates from the word victory.
Yeah.
Gamarjoba is a victory in Georgian. So it says like, we wish you a victory in every hello.
Gamarjoba. So what does Kartuli mean?
Kartuli means Georgian. So when you say I'm Georgian, I'm saying I'm Kartreli. Kartuli means Georgian.
Okay.
So if we say like, Kartuli restorani means Georgian restaurant.
So you two are the first Georgian people I've ever met.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that
that's
bizarre?
So nice.
And I'm serious. I've been looking online because everyone says go to Georgia and I have some time off. And I was like, maybe I should go. Why should I go? Tell me.
The first of all, because it's just 2 hours drive, not drive, flight. From
drive, okay.
Hopefully soon by drive. Yes.
But it's 2 hours, okay.
2 hours and a half, yeah. Let's make it clear. So then it's very, you can change the full atmosphere, the nature. We have all the seasons. We have mountains, we have the seaside, you have these wineries full of culture, full of history and beautiful, delicious cuisine. The food is amazing. Everybody who went to Georgia remembers either food, either culture, this experience, you know, this vintage, authentic experience that they had in Georgia.
Yeah.
So that's how we want to represent Georgia in UAE.
So how long have you two been here now?
I've been here for the past 3 years and a half.
And you were in Georgia originally before you came here, both of you?
I was. Yes.
No, never lived in Georgia myself, although I'm 100% Georgian. I moved from Singapore where I spent my 8 years, and before that in Jakarta, and before that in Moscow. So I have long path through travels and changing homes, but Dubai is my home.
So did you two happen to bump into each other or go to a Georgian event or a restaurant? How did you meet then?
That's a good question. We met actually in Georgia, in Tbilisi, through our common friends and the family on a Georgian football match, which it was my first time. And I think it was my first time as well
at the stadium. And we apparently we had a bunch of common friends. We didn't know that we knew each other from them, but we by accident met COVID times. Like back then it was open, like Georgia didn't care much. So we met at the stadium.
And then what happened when you met the restaurant? I mean, when you met at the stadium, did you just stay in touch and get on with each other? Or you both knew you were living in Dubai now?
Yes, for me, almost 3 years that I'm here. But it was, I think it was very important meeting for me because Nina invited me for just to spend a weekend in Dubai. Just to come and check the residential Dubai, because I have been here before. But as you know, as a normal tourist, you go to the beach or Dubai Mall and that's Dubai for you. But
yeah.
Nino really showed me a different side of Dubai, which is more residential and interesting. So on that weekend, Poonam, I decided to come and live to Dubai. So wow. It was after 1 week that I took your tickets and now,
yeah, and we had so many business ideas that we're sharing. Okay, let's start this. Let's start this. Let's promote Georgia. There's so much to show people in UAE because it's just Georgia is booming from travel perspective and tourists, but nobody is promoting Georgia as much as we wanted to show how rich it is, cuisine-wise, culture-wise. So I think this is conception that. We are Georgians, we want to promote Georgia, and we're in Dubai. So we have this good position to speak and to explain people what is Georgia.
You know, when I first came to Dubai, I had a TV show and we would travel around the world on this TV show because it was a travel lifestyle show. And I was sitting next to a lady at a fashion show called Fashion Forward. And she said, we want our tourist board from Georgia would like you to come over and feature Georgia. And I remember saying, what, Georgia in USA? I didn't even know where this place was. But in the past several years, it has blown up. So the tourist board are definitely pushing it outside, right?
Yes, correct, very much,
and
yes.
It's bizarre how none of us really knew much about this place. So let's talk about the restaurant. Are you both from a restaurant background at all?
I am. So from childhood, I wanted to become a chef and work in the kitchen. And I have graduated hospitality and tourism management school in France. And after that, I worked in different restaurants from different countries. My last experience was in France, in direct kitchen. So there was like an army. And that was my last experience directly in the kitchen. And I decided, okay, I want to be in the food business in the restaurant, but not directly in the kitchen.
Was it quite strict?
Yes, it was very strict. And it was a tough experience, but good to have, you know. So after that, I returned back to Georgia and I was working in the retail supermarket field and food production. And on the side, I have launched my consulting firm. I was consulting how to open a restaurant, how to do the concept, the design, and create the menu, and so on.
And then you, Nina?
Myself. So I'm completely from another planet, another world. I have a legal background. I'm a lawyer myself.
Oh, everyone needs a lawyer. Mariam, you did really well there. Yeah.
So my background is like I run a few consultancy firms in Singapore and Dubai. I do different transactions which need 16, 18 hours working, sitting and working on laptop, reading. So I thought all my life that at the same time I need some, you know, challenge on the other side to explore more in another field, which is uncommon, which I've never done in my life. But I have passion. I have passion for food, for cooking. And throughout my last 10 years, I was thinking of launching a restaurant. But I think it was a match of good time with a good right business partner. And I think it just worked simultaneously that we decided to open a delivery concept. Initially, we were a delivery concept. We launched in September.
Yeah.
The name was different, like Tamada, Authentic Georgian. And that's how we launched from delivery concept, just to check how the market, how will be the demand, how people will love our food. And there was so much interest in our cuisine. Like people were calling us every day. Where is Tamada? Where are you guys? We're just standing here on Google, but we can't see your name board. We said, well, sorry, it's just a delivery. So with the first month when the store, we need to expand as soon as possible because people love Georgian cuisine and people were even calling, oh, last time I was in Georgia, I remember eating this khachapuri. Can I order?
That's exactly what the presenter who was here before, Charlie, she was said to me, Jen, she said, ask them about the cheese bread. And I said, yeah, I love cheese. But is that with cheese? Do you mix the dough with the cheese? Because she said there was cheese everywhere in it.
Yes, yeah, so the cheese is a very big part of the Georgian cuisine. So what we did, once we first started, even the delivery concept, we decided, okay, we will do anything concerned with the food if we make a homemade cheese, if we make a real sulguni and Imeretian cheese, which is like a heritage for Georgia. And this khachapuri, which is a cheese and dough dish, is done from sulguni mixed with Imeretian cheese. And what we do is we do like a dough and then put on top the cheese.
And so there are different varieties of khachapuri. At least we have four. It can be with cheese inside and on top.
Yeah.
There is boat shape with egg, which is very popular outside of Georgia, not that popular for Georgians, but I don't know how it worked that people started like loving khachapuri, this boat shaped. And there are other types of khachapuri with beans, with red beans, which is vegetarian.
Well, we're going to go through the menu, but I also want to talk about a lot of the furniture and the design of your actual restaurant because it's beautiful and there's a lot of history there. So do not go anywhere. We'll be back.
You're listening to Farmer's Kitchen on Dubai Eye 103.8.
With Spinneys. Eat well, live well.
So with me now is Lawyer Nino and Chef Mariam. We've come together, met at a football stadium, you said?
Yes.
That's right, in Georgia, and have decided to open a restaurant called Katuli. So let's talk about Katuli because I know that you've wanted to keep it as authentic as possible when it comes not only to the food, the technique, but even the carpets and the furniture. Tell me.
Mariam, you should. That's your field completely.
Yeah, as I have mentioned, the name Kartuli means Georgian. So the main idea to doing the restaurant was to recreate the traditional Georgian home. When the guests enter, they feel that, okay, it's a very homely atmosphere, very authentic and vintage. And they feel that they are hosted by Georgians in their household. Even the food serving is done how we do at home. You know, in every culture and cuisine, there is always two different recipes for each food. There is a restaurant style and a home style recipe. So we really focused on the very home style recipes of Georgian to feel more authentic. And in the design, we have used we wanted to represent Georgia in a historic way as well.
Okay.
So we used 19th and 20th century Georgia. So when you enter, you have some decorative elements from the 19th century, which is more of the bourgeois period, and 20th century when it's like more of the Soviet period, Georgia. To make it more realistic, we decided to bring almost 700 kg of goods from directly from Georgia. So it was the real vintage cutleries, vintage plates, decorative items, furniture. So when you enter, you can even smell, feel, and see Georgia. So you can explore everything, beginning from traditions to food to cuisine, everything.
Is there carpets that are 130 years old?
Yeah, that's actually, thank you
are
for asking.
Are we allowed to walk on this?
I'm not allowed, but you are allowed.
Are they on the wall? Do we take our shoes off if we have to walk on it?
I would love to, but I cannot. So it's one of my favorite items in the restaurant. So the carpet, which is inside, we have two carpets. So outside carpet is 80 years old, which is from Hevsureti region. Mostly like carpets are done from Hevsureti region. Mm-hmm. But when you enter, there is this magnificent carpet, which is 130 years old, and it's done in Pshavi region, which is very rarely to get the carpet from that region. Wow. So it's kind of a museum item.
Well, it was in the museum. It was in the museum. We bought from the private collection of the museum.
Wow.
Yes. So we brought it from
Georgia. So we can't go in there and wipe our feet. You have to be extremely delicate with carpets like this.
Yes.
Wow. What about the chefs? Where are they from?
So when we started delivery concept back then, we brought four chefs from Georgia. And then we have expanded to Kartuli and opened a restaurant. We added three more chefs. So mostly in the kitchen, we have a Georgian chefs from different regions. Mm-hmm. So if we have an Emiratian khachapuri, there is an Emiratian chef who is doing it. Or
we'll do separate days for each region. So each chef could represent where is he coming from in traditional dish of that specific region. So guests can travel with us and try those specific dishes from different region.
So I know a lot of people say that in Georgia, the food is actually cheap. Is that because you have a lot of different, you know, you said you have the mountains, you have the beach. Does Georgia itself grow a lot of homegrown produce that they don't need to import? Is that why it's fairly quality food and quite cheap?
I agree. Yes, we have a lot of agriculture and very tasty fruits and vegetables. It tastes very different. It's very natural. That's why we had this first idea to establish the distribution company to help to import Georgian products to Dubai. It was before starting a delivery kitchen to help these farmers to learn how to do the certification, how to do the export documents so they can also export our beautiful products abroad.
Okay, so when I do come and visit you, because I've never eaten at a Georgian restaurant, what are the main things I should definitely order on the
menu? You should definitely eat hinkali. This is our best dish. That I would say this is the best hinkali in town, and not only in Dubai, but even for Georgia. We have a lot of Georgian customers. They're saying, even I don't remember last time I ate that hinkali in Georgia.
What is that?
Hinkali is a dumpling, and there are different fillings inside. Most popular are with beef and lamb, cheese, and you can have also mushrooms and potatoes. But with the mix, I think my beloved dish is hinkali with beef and lamb.
Beef and lamb. And what about desserts? Are you known for your desserts?
Oh, we're not well known for desserts, but we have a traditional two desserts, which are churchela, which is with walnuts, and badagi, which is a natural grape juice, which we are actually importing from Georgia to make a pelamushi, which is like this pudding-style dessert from this natural grape juice. And then we have churchela, which is walnuts done in a candle shape with this badagi juice.
And just finally, what has the feedback been like from a lot of customers that have come into the restaurant?
They love the atmosphere, because you have traveled and you forget that you're in Dubai. You have traveled to Georgia, not only by the food that you are eating, it's very authentic, and we tried to be that authentic that it will give you the experience how you would eat in Tbilisi with those ingredients, because we are bringing Georgian products and serving in Dubai. So even tomatoes we're bringing from Georgia, all the food, cheese we're making here, it's homemade cheese. So I would say food is authentic, 100%. And most important, I would say that the environment and this cozy vintage atmosphere brings you to the old Georgia home, which gives you completely travel out.
You forget you're in Dubai.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's nice to have that feeling occasionally.
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing. So where can we find Kartuli?
Kartuli.
Where can we find it?
So we are located in downtown Dubai, in the very center. It's in Al Houd Street in Dunya Tower. So it's kind of a, it's in front of the address Dubai Mall. We're in a very cozy street, and it's kind of a hidden gem. Dubai. Yes.
Yeah. So, guys, if you want to know their Instagram page, it's spelled Qartuli. But you can just send me the word Georgia, and I will give you more information. Ladies, Mariam and Ninu, are you in the restaurant regularly?
Yes, we are.
You are.
Yes,
as a lawyer, you're working from there?
Nighttime.
Okay, thank you so much. And thank you so much for these little gifts. I really appreciate it.
And please visit us. We will have this weekend and the next weekend.
Georgian Festival.
Oh, wow.
We'll have a live music directly from Georgia. The trio, the band is coming. We will be doing the Georgian desserts. We'll sell our Kartuli products, cheese and homemade sauces as well. So it will be very interesting.
Brilliant.
And thank you very much for inviting us.
Anytime.
Thank you, Poonam.
This is Farmer's Kitchen on Dubai Eye 103.8.
With Spinneys. Eat well, live well.
With me now is Mira Amanik. She is an author. She's written a few books, and she's won. Her recent one is called A Book of Chai, History, Stories and Recipes. And she joins me now. Hello, Mira. How are you doing?
Hi. Lovely to be on here. And thank you so much for having me. I've got the book right here.
Where are you talking from? Where are you?
I am at London Coffee Festival, where I have a stall, a chai stall, and I've just come out to a cafe nearby. And I hope you can hear me properly, because there's nowhere else I could go that I could find that was quiet. So this is quiet.
Sorry, which city are you in England?
Oh, sorry, London.
Oh, okay. Is that where you grew up?
Yes, I grew up in London, and I'm born and brought up here. But I've lived in Dubai for a number of years in the past, and in Africa. I've traveled all over India. I used to be a travel journalist years ago. So
interesting. Okay, let me ask you a question. You know, we hear all different kinds of chai. The words used very loosely. What is your definition of chai?
So chai, in actual fact, means tea. However, I think now globally, it's started to come to mean what masala chai is, which is spicy Indian tea. And so I think there are many interpretations. However, the actual translation of chai is literally tea.
So when I came to Dubai, I mean, obviously I'm Indian and I grew up having masala chai, but everyone started saying garak chai. Now, we never used the word garak. What is the difference between masala and garak?
So amazingly, I even was wondering, I was actually in Dubai last week, and garak is used everywhere. It's almost the word for chai,
I
which
know.
Is really amazing and surprising. I just find that so bizarre. However, it's just interesting to see that, because what garak means is, in effect, what the translation of garak is strong.
Yeah.
So a garak chai is strong in the tea leaves rather than anything else.
Okay.
So you've got to make sure if it's a garak, it has to be strong tea. So for example, the chai that we drink at home, which is Gujarati chai, we always make it garak. But weirdly, in Dubai, garak equals tea.
I know.
It's really interesting, because chai latte in London equals masala chai. Garak in Dubai equals masala chai. Oh, no, not masala chai. It's just boiled tea. It was milk, but very strong on the tea.
I know. Everyone uses their own terms and then it just sticks.
Yeah, I've actually got a section in my book called The Different Names of Chai. but yeah, it's really fascinating how there are different names. And I don't get irritated about it. I just think it's very interesting, because I grew up, this is what I've written about in the book as well, which is really bizarre considering I've written a book on tea. I grew up drinking chai. But what I thought of as chai was their homemade Indian tea. So I always thought chai is a spicy Indian tea, whereas tea, what I drink outside, is English tea. All these years, I had it all wrong.
No, but that's exactly how I grew up. I have either English tea, which is black tea and cold milk, or I have Indian spicy tea at home, which is chai, masala chai.
Yes. So that's really funny, because I even started a cafe called Chai by Mira, and then the brand. And all that time, I thought chai is the spice. And in all my chais that I serve in the cafe, and now that I have, they're all just spices and coconut sugar.
That is so interesting. Well, listen, why did you want to specifically dedicate a book to chai?
So I wrote a cookbook to start with, Saffron Soul. Then I wrote a book on Ayurveda. And all my books have been very different. And when I was thinking about the third book, I thought it would be on nutrition. I've studied nutrition. I've become an integrated health practitioner. I've studied Ayurveda. But actually, my brand is chai. And what I really love is spices. And I love chai, and I love the stories that people tell when they're drinking chai, and the gossip that people have around, you know, when they're drinking cups of tea. And actually, my love affair is really with that, with storytelling, with chai, with sitting in a cafe with a cup of chai or coffee and talking to your friend or your family over a cup of chai. And chai has been such a constant for me throughout my life. Mm. Wherever I've gone, I've had like my little masala box and I've made my own cup of chai. And I think that's what inspired my third book. I just thought, what should I write my third book about? And I came up with different names, all to do with nutrition and health. And then I was like, actually, why don't I just write the something about chai? And we came up with the name The Book of Chai.
And what kind of things are we going to find in this book? Because I did read there were 65 recipes. Now, I think I can make 3 different recipes of chai, you know, the normal cardamom, the ginger or whatever. But 65? What is going on?
Yeah, so the book has, let me just tell you how the book is divided up. Firstly, there's the whole history section, which is so fascinating because Indians didn't drink tea before the 1900s. And yet we now think of Indian tea or chai as the national drink of India. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, the book also covers a lot of my own personal travel stories. I used to be a travel journalist, and about India centered around cups of chai, and my own family stories with my grandmother and such things. And then the recipes are lots of regional recipes of chai, plus my own versions of making chai, whether it's a chocolate chai with ginger or whatever it is. Plus, lots of snacks to eat with chai, whether it's pakora or
samosa,
cupcakes. But pakora is like deep-fried fritters, almost, made with different vegetables. You can make also paneer pakora, but like, you know, whether it's spinach pakora, and it's deep-fried, meaning the vegetables are put in a batter of chickpea flour,
yeah,
and then deep-fried. And pakora and chai is a very monsoon India combination. So when you're in India and the monsoons, the one thing that Indians crave and they serve on the streets and everywhere is pakora and chai. And then Gujarati specifically drink, they eat things like tepla and dokra and ondor. So I've got one of those recipes in the book. And then I've got, you know, bun masta, which is the Irani cafe combination that you get for breakfast in traditional Irani cafes in Mumbai, which is just very, very soft, but yet crispy, crunchy bread with a thick layer of butter. Served with tea. And there's loads of recipes that go hand in hand, eat well with chai. But also I've got lots of spiced recipes with things like spiced porridges, masala chai cupcakes, you know, chai cake, lots of baked things and healthy breakfasts.
So do we know the actual origins of the actual masala chai? Where was it born? Or because people have different stories.
Masala chai, we don't know where that was born. However, we do know that chai came to India very, very late. And it was because of the British that the Indians drink tea the way they do now. So I can go into the whole history book. But really, to kind of summarize, it came from China. The Indians got addicted to it. They sort of fought wars with China over opium because they were supplying, they were trading opium for tea. And then they realized once they won the opium wars, they were like, we need another place to make chai that is our own. So they started growing chai in India. They took those saplings from China, started growing them in India, realized that India was all growing it all along in Assam, but then also realized that Indians weren't really drinking tea. They were only cooking it in their sort of curries. And then they started growing it on a mass production, mass level in India. What I've also touched on in the book is the slavery that went on, the indentured labor in India by the British, which is really heartbreaking when I read about it, because again, there's not much light that's been shone on that, and it's a really harsh part of the history. And then they started exporting it to the UK, I mean to England and to other parts of the world, and then over time, maybe 50 years later, realized that actually we want another market. And that's when they started a massive marketing campaign in India and got the Indians addicted to chai. And that's how Indians started drinking tea, essentially. However, as to when the spices were added, when the milk was added, and when it became a sugary tea, that, you know, masala chai as we know it now, we don't know the origins of that. Most people think that the milk was added in Gujarat because that's sort of the dairy capital of India, that's where dairies produce.
Yeah.
As to when the spices were added, I don't know that, but I think that's a way that, again, what I read from my research, it's a way for the chai wallahs to sort of start differentiating themselves. However, just as important to know is that the history of drinking spices in hot water as a herbal medicinal concoction is much older than drinking tea. So actually the history of spices and a drink called gada comes from the ancient text of the Ayurveda.
Tell us about some of the benefits when it comes to tea, because that is something I think you talk about in your book.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it's all about the spices, and I love spices. And each and every spice has healing, digestive, and anti-inflammatory benefits. Cinnamon, for example, is great for blood sugar. Ginger is great for cold, cough, and it's anti-inflammatory. It works on the whole system. And there are more benefits than that. Turmeric, we all know, has plenty of benefits, including anti-inflammatory, antifungal, antibacterial. Nutmeg is great for the brain, for relaxing, for calming. So is saffron. Saffron boosts the mood. Black pepper, again, so many benefits. And it's used a lot in actually Ayurvedic medicine and herbal, herbal medication tablets. So black pepper is used a lot. And I use that in my chai as well. And a lot of Indians use it in their chai spice blends. And lastly, cardamom. Again, lots of digestion benefits there. And the ginger, cardamom, cinnamon, I've touched on all of them, I think. And each and every one of them will help digestion and metabolism as well. So while each spice has its own flavor benefits and enhances your cup of chai and your food, it also has great medicinal benefits.
Yeah, I mean, I generally, obviously growing up in an Indian household, we use all of this in our food generally. I put a lot of turmeric and, you know, gram flour and all this on my face. And cardamom I have every day in my tea. So it's just a habit, but we forget about the benefits. Now, Lena's texting saying, is there a spice in my chai I can put that will help me with sleep before I go to bed?
Sleep, and I've written about this in my book, and I really, really love this one, is saffron. And nutmeg in hot milk will really help calm the system. And if you like cinnamon, you can add that. None of these spices will give you tons of energy. So they don't have caffeine or anything. Mm. So you can put all the spices, but in specific, nutmeg and saffron will help you relax more and have a better night's sleep. But obviously, don't overdo it. Look up the benefits of saffron. You only need a pinch of these things. And with saffron especially, you need the tiniest amount. And nutmeg, again, like less than a quarter of a teaspoon in a cup of milk.
Now, you talked about energy. Kieran says that a lot of the times to stay awake or, you know, throughout the day, if he has a bit of slump in the afternoon, he'll have a coffee. So what can he use instead if he wanted to have some tea and add a spice in there?
I would say if you wanted to have a cup of tea, you can add cinnamon, cardamom. And if you're having coffee pairs really well with cardamom and ginger. And actually adding spices to any drinks, whether it's tea or coffee or matcha, it enhances the flavor and it has medicinal benefits. So while you're, you know, getting energy from your coffee or your tea, you're also adding anti-inflammatory benefits and digestion benefits from the cinnamon, the cardamom, the nutmeg, the clove, all of those things. I didn't mention clove before, but clove is another one which, while it's quite a strong spice and it tastes pretty potent, if you only use a tiny amount, it's actually very good for any pain relieving things. So if you have a toothache and you put a little clove by that tooth, it will help to relieve you of that pain.
So this is your third book, is that right?
Yes, it is.
So I know you've written, so your passion is like Ayurvedic and alternative health and nutrition. Is that what you really base your books around?
Yeah, I think it's the Ayurveda, principles of Ayurveda that hinge themselves upon digestion. I think digestion is super important. That's where I have actually started my own journey because I had digestion problems, and living with that, you realize that actually you're winning at life and you're winning at everything if you just work with your digestive system and make sure that you eat correctly, move correctly, you add exercise into your diet and health, I mean into your daily life. However, my books are, the first book is a cookbook and it's all recipes I grew up eating. It's very healthy but also very easy to make, and that's what I feel strongly about. Things that are easy to make, that are accessible, and they're simple in terms of ingredients, because the less ingredients you use, the less complex that food is and the easier it is for your stomach to digest that food. And yes, my whole principle is Ayurveda. However, I do combine modern day medicine and nutrition and supplements into that, because I think we have a lot to benefit from combining everything.
Yeah. And do you have a fourth book in the pipeline?
Well, when I read the second book, I never had the third in the pipeline. I think they're just born and they come about when they happen. But right now, apart from this book, I'm focusing on the chai business and growing it. We're right now in about 100 cafes and I want to expand that. And in Dubai now as well. So I want to expand that in Dubai as well. So that's what I'm focusing on now.
So you supply spices, chai spices, is that correct, to cafes?
Yeah, chai blends, exactly. So we have a classic chai, golden chai, chocolate chai. And people can just make, baristas can just make it with milk. And it's just super simple, easy, no fluff chai, chai spices essentially. And people can just have the chai latte very easily.
I need to connect you with my cousin because he's originally from the UK, but he's in Copenhagen and he started his own chai blend as well. So I should connect you guys together.
Wow. Yeah. 100%. I'd love that. Yeah. Yes. Lovely to chat to you.
I will send you a message and I'll tell him to check you out. He might even follow you anyway, but it was really interesting because he's just started it, I think, a year or two ago. So I think it'd be good for him to talk to you about it. But anyway, listen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ahead, Mira. Go ahead.
I was just saying that the chai revolution or the chai sort of arena in the world has just expanded so much in recent times. And everywhere you go, especially in the UK right now, there's chai everywhere.
I know, because the coffee culture has taken over a lot here in Dubai. And I feel when I'm in England, I'm drinking more tea. I don't drink coffee hardly ever there. So I think it depends where you are as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But I do see it got out everywhere in Dubai as well. So. It's quite confusing, this whole product thing. And
I know.
It's not actually like spices. It's just very boiled tea with strong tea leaves.
I'm so glad you're just as confused as I am because I just like, okay, we'll have kuruk, which I don't know what it means. But Mira, thank you so much. Next time you're in Dubai, you'll have to pop into the studio and come and be live with us here in the studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thank you so much. Make sure you tune into Farmer's Kitchen every Friday at 2 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.